Hello, Mzanzi. You're listening to Farmers Inside Track, proudly brought to you by Food for Mzanzi. Officially, this is the world's best podcast for 2024, as awarded by WANEFRA, the global organization for the world's press. I am your host, Patricia Tembo. Welcome to episode 493. Today, we're unpacking control strategies for a pest that I know gives farmers a headache and early gray hairs, and that is the infamous cutworm. This episode is set to be informative and practical as we welcome Blessing Pasele, entomologist and PhD candidate. Welcome to Farmers Inside Track, Blessing.
Thank you for the introduction, Patricia. I hope I'll be helpful to your audience, especially your farmers or this type of cutworm. Yeah, thank you so much for the introduction.
Maybe if you could just give a background or briefly explain the cutworm. I believe the scientific name is Abrotis ypsilon. Why there's such a threat on us?
Cutworm, of course, yeah. Just the name alone, it says what it does, the worm it cuts, of course, yeah. So it is a polyphagous insect pest for many of our crops, including the vegetables and green crops. The name itself, since I've said that, is cutworm. You actually have got it in different species. So the Abrotis ypsilon is one of the species of that insect pest. There are several, I think there's over seven of those, but the most common one is common cutworm. There's black and brown and gray, so the varieties. So in here, South Africa, I think the most common are those which I've just mentioned. But then again, yeah, like you said, that they actually a threat to potato farmers because they are also troop feeders. At instances whereby you find that the troopers are shallow, they've got actually a potential to cause a significant crop loss to those farmers who are farming potatoes. The name cutworm says that it cuts whatever that it comes across, and then in most of the case, it cuts the seedlings just near the soil surface.
Where is it most prevalent? Is it a pest that is found in all regions, or are there specific environmental conditions that favor the life cycle of this worm?
It is actually widespread, so you find it across the country. But then what normally happens is that you will have the moths that are active throughout winter period. Because of their relationship, of course, with weeds, what they will do is that they will normally lay most of their eggs on the weeds, which of course, whatever that it is to hatch from there, will actually become abundant during the spring period. Most of the time, that's where most farmers are acting with their crop production activities. So when most of your farmers commences with their farming activities, which is of course, it is mostly early spring, that's whereby you find that it is coming there and becoming rapid in terms of numbers. So if you are to speak about where it is actually throughout the country and the specific environmental conditions, like I'm saying that, it is actually adaptable to many of the conditions that you have in South Africa. But then, like I'm saying, that it's active during winter, meaning that whatever that it lays during winter will actually become rapid as the spring comes in and going into summer. Of course, as the season goes by, that's whereby these infestations come high because of the favorable conditions, wherever they will be, which of course will be mostly from spring to summer and then driving into winter again. So what we understand so far is that for as much as that it does well under spring and summer periods, it is actually also able to survive during winter periods. Of course, during those times, you find that the developmental period of it gets prolonged due to lower temperatures, but then still even during those periods, it is able to survive, meaning that it can actually survive cold temperatures. So you ask something about the life cycle. There's got actually four stages in its life cycle, whereby you have the female moths, which can lay over 1,000 eggs on the soil surface and, of course, on the plant materials that will be there in the field, especially in the fallow field. So from there, you're going to have your larval instars, which of course, I think it can go as far as 9 instars, which of course are very detrimental in terms of causing the damage on the crops. And then that to follow, of course, following the larval instars, you're going to have a pupa. So what happens is that only in a second, as the larva is to transit to the pupal stage, you'll find that the big worm usually goes down, tunnels down into the soil. And then that's where by most of its pupation takes place. And then once the pupation, it actually takes about 2 to 3 weeks, depending on the conditions, and it can even be longer if, of course, it's cold. So that's whereby you're going to start to have your adult moth coming from pupation.
What are the early signs of infestation that farmers can look out for? And if you could use the example of potato farmers, just because they're quite vocal.
So the early indications of this culprit in your field is that you notice wilting and stand losses of your seedlings there and there. At cases whereby you find that the larvae is old enough, of course, they're going to start cutting on those seedlings there at the bottom. And then when you find that the larval instars are still small, tend to have some small holes on the leaves. So these are some of the things that farmers should look into when doing the scouting of their field. Look for wilting and the stand loss of seedlings, which of course are the early signs of the presence of this particular insect pest in the field.
Is there a way to differentiate like the wilting from it got to do with soil deficiencies or nutritional deficiencies and it coming from the presence of this pest?
By wilting, what's going to happen is that most of it, you're going to see that we can actually relate it to the plant being hurt. There's wilting that's coming from deficiencies of nutrients. But then there's also the mechanical damage that can occur to the plant. That's the sort of wilting that farmers should be looking into. That we find that the seedling still looks healthy, everything's okay, but it's wilting. And then you are not able to relate it to anything, perhaps maybe a lack of water, a lack of nutrients. That's where, but you know, whatever damage that actually happened to that particular seedling, that particular plant, should be mechanical. So could it either have been maybe someone working between the plants, had the plant with or something, but then in instances whereby you've got this cartoon, that's the mechanical damage, of course, that you're going to be looking into. That's whereby it's going to lead to say, if someone really had your plants with the equipment, therefore it's going to say to you that there should be something which has damaged the structure of the plant. To be simple, when I say that, look for that mechanical damage on your seedlings and they'll be able to identify if someone has had your plants or whatever that has happened. Because with the cattle, when it takes a bite of your seedling, what you're going to have is that the biting of it on the plant, that should actually lead you to say that this which happened here is the cryptium actually feeding on this plant, of course, resulting into wilting. The next cycle consists of four stages, right? So you've got the adults, which of course will mate, of course, and we'll pose it, where we understand that the female can lay a minimum of about 1,000 eggs on the soil surface on the plant materials that you'll find fallow. You'll be found laying around on the fallow land, be it the stem or the grasses or the weeds, which of course many times we understand that they tend to overposit on the weeds during winter. So from the hatching eggs, what you're going to have, what you're going to find is that I'm going to have larval instars, which can go up until 9 instars. Of course, it varies between the species, and also that also get to be influenced by their diet, because others, they'll tell you that they forgot about 6 instars. From larval instars, we understand that the larvae will transit to pupa, which of course you understand that larvae will go deep into the soil, whereby it does most of its pupation. And from that pupation, it will take about 2 to 3 weeks, depending on the conditions, before it transits to the adult moths. So basically, it consists of 4 stages, and the larval instars is the detrimental stage of this insect, as it does the cutting of the seedlings, causing damage to your crops.
So that larvae stage is the stage that affects crops the most?
Definitely.
How would a farmer then target that larvae stage? What are the best methods for monitoring a cutworm population?
Monitoring for infestations. So we normally advise farmers to scout their plants. Scouting is the best monitoring system, because now we understand that the cutworm spends most of its time under the debris or drill deep down into the soil, because it's nocturnal, of course. Yeah, it's very rare for farmers to find it crawling between its plants. So what it does is that it waits up until late in the evenings or at night to start doing the cuttings. So scouting is the best method to monitor this pest. So what farmers can do is that if they tend to have some weeds around in their field, they also try to look around those weeds, especially those which have got extended surface. So what they normally do is that they find those kind of weed species which are spreading on the ground to be very ideal for habitat. So they normally lie or maybe hide below the materials of those which are around. So this is just whereby farmers, because we understand that monitoring it, especially scouting for it, can also be intensive. But then we also advise farmers to dig holes, of course, where they've got weeds which are extended covering the surface around those weeds, and then they try to dig a little bit deeper to see if whether there's anything on the soil. That's how we can actually efficiently and effectively can monitor these insect pests, except of course for looting for adult populations, which most of the time are the moths. We understand very much that in terms of identifying the moth, to say this is what actually get to be confusing for farmers. So we best recommend that farmers do the scouting and then do the digging near the weeds, looking for the larvae that could be hiding there in the field.
You mentioned something quite interesting, and that is that the cutworm is nocturnal. And I'm thinking, no wonder why it's such a hard, like this pest, why it come out at night.
Yeah, that's when everyone is sleeping. That's where they start to get busy with the crops. And when everyone wakes up during the day, they are not able to see it. And then the farmers start to think, perhaps there are people coming into my farm cutting off my plants.
You also mentioned the importance of how they lay the eggs and weeds. Weed control is probably a very important control method. Can you maybe speak more on the best control methods for eradicating?
So many times we will advise farmers of sanitation. We normally say, there's this product that I really like that goes by cleanliness is next to godliness. So even in pest management, if farmers can perform sanitation in their fields, that's the best way of controlling this, because we understand that plant debris that most farmers leave lying around mostly in their fields are the ones that actually will give rise to populations in the next coming growing season. Especially cutworm are able to survive on those materials that you leave lying around in the field. And then we know that also farmers sometimes just tend to let weeds grow there and they're not paying attention to it. These are some of the things that actually allow it to survive in the absence of crops. So if farmers can effectively manage weeds and make sure that their fields are weed-free, I think that will be one step into the right direction in terms of managing it. And of course, whereby they've got plant materials, they try to discard and burn those and try to make that clean field before they start with the season. Sometimes you'll find that we even go to an extent of saying that prepare your land a month before.
Of course, we can't speak about pest management without touching on integrated pest management. So what strategies would you advise to farmers related to IPM?
So understanding that IPM is a sequence of events. It's not a one thing. Farmers must just think it this way, that IPM don't do it once and then you're done with it. It begins the day you decide that I'm going to plant this particular crop. I'm going to transplant this particular crop, right? If farmers can understand very well that which methods works better with what. For example, now, like we were talking about sanitation. If a farmer perhaps find out there's been infestation in the field, part of the cultural methods that is there is to prolong your planting, manipulating your planting date, which of course also falls within the cultural methods. So if farmers can try to do it, like I was saying before, that keep your field clean, which is sanitation. And then if you find that you've got infestation then there, prolong your planting, meaning that manipulate your planting period. Instead of doing it at that particular period, say that let me at least wait for about 30 days to 40 days, which of course we understand that it is a generation. So meaning that in the absence of food, whatever generation that is there is going to be reduced. So considering that cutworm, it crawls, it moves between the plants. Part of the IPM would suggest is that farmers also try to scatter the bait granules between the plants, because we know very well that for this culprit to move from plant to plant, they're moving on the surface rather than below the soil. So if you've got your bait granules scattered between the plants, that's another part of the strategy that can be included within the IPM. And of course, farmers also do understand of biological control. There are predators which predates on the eggs as well as the larvae that they can think of. And then of course, at the later stage whereby they do realize that whatever method that they've tried on is not working, it is whereby they can start to say that let's look into insecticides. Well, with insecticides, of course, we know very well that it has got its own challenges, of course, there and there. Like, for example, now that we understand that the larvae goes deep into the soil, and then meaning that if you are applying insecticides, you are not directly applying insecticides on it, but then applying insecticides whereby it's going to be working on, meaning that it's going to have to make contact with it. But the disadvantage of that is that we have to make sure, again, that wherever where you are going to be applying insecticides, they're going to be effective for quite some time when they are coming up. Thereby, many times we have the challenges of the soil surface being dry and hot. And we know very well that when you apply insecticides during those conditions, your insecticides tend to lose their effectiveness. So we will normally say to a farmer that try to keep your field, or before you apply insecticides, try to keep it moist, so that whenever that you want to be applying insecticides, most importantly, that application of insecticides be done in the afternoon, of course. Because if you are to do it earlier in the day, perhaps before lunch, we know for sure by afternoon, it will have been dried out. Meaning that when it's going to be coming out in the evenings, it's going to find that the party can just walk by. So if farmers spray those insecticides in the afternoons, there's actually a greater chance of that insecticides coming into contact, of course, with that larvae that will be walking at night. So that's part of the IPM that we are thinking about. Farmers can include the cultural methods and then do also bring on the baits in the form of chemical control. And then, of course, in later stage, of course, applying those insecticides, which, of course, are going to be in the form of liquid. That's actually effective, or the best way in terms of IPM that farmer can manage this insect pest.
I find that the information you've just shared is really valuable. And I just want to ask, the bait granule, are there any specific brand that you know to be effective? Maybe what farmers should look for, maybe?
You know, sometimes as researchers, we refrain from advertising companies, because many times we know that if we are to speak of the active ingredient, you find that farmers are not aware of the active ingredient. But then what I can suggest is that farmers try to contact their local advisors. I'm sure they should be able to lead them to the right direction in terms of which baits they can purchase. But then if they've got the resources, of course, of contacting those chemical companies, I'm certain that they can assist them in terms of which baits that they can buy. But then I'm certain that they can still get them from those chemical companies.
So farmers should just speak to the experts and see what active ingredients to look for when purchasing these.
Not necessarily active ingredients, but then to just say that, where can you get what you call the base actually to manage the cattle? And maybe, of course, any of the agents in their areas, they should be able to advise them where they can get the base from.
Wrapping up now, speaking to small-scale farmers, we know that costs are usually, you know, something that's on the mind and how they can afford to prevent these pests, because financial inputs is always a thing. And, you know, what advice do you have for farmers who want cost-effective strategies for managing the cutworm? I know you mentioned cultural methods, but to supplement that as well, are there other cost-effective strategies?
So looking at the budget means that we want to cut costs, right? Meaning that management should be cheaper but effective at the same time. At this point, I don't think there's any point. I cannot think of any approach that you can use except that of the cultural method and, of course, of employing natural resources. But then what you understand also is that the control agents, they tend to have the difficulty of managing these insect pests. And then many times it leads to economic crop losses, of course, yeah? And then forcing farmers to go down that route of insecticides. So except for cultural methods, of course, which the measures I've explained, and unfortunately, I cannot think of any other cost-effective way that farmers can do. But then with what I've said around the cultural method, I think those are the basics, of course, for crop production. So I don't think there's anything else above from what I've said that they can start to think of in terms of managing. So keeping their land free from weeds and free from plant debris is the best cost-effective way for farmers to manage the cutworms, of course.
Thank you so much to Blessing Pahlele, who is an entomologist and PhD candidate. For more information on this topic, you can visit www.foodforumzanzi.co.za. And that brings us to the end of this episode. Remember to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform. From me, Patricia Timbo, our technical producer, Megan van der Vent, and the rest of hashtag Team Food for Mzanzi, thank you for listening.
Africa's dopest gathering for young farmers is back. Don't miss your chance to join the who's who's of agriculture, from top-tier experts to game-changing farmers, at the Mzanzi Young Farmers Indaba on 1 and 2 April 2025 in Pretoria. Early bird tickets are now available, so head to farmingindaba.com to get your full access pass for a discounted price. That's farmingindaba.com for early bird access to a full access pass. You don't want to miss out.